Good morning. May it please the court. I thank you for this opportunity. The government's view of this case is that it's a single defendant and a single judge and a single sentencing. I think this case implicates the integrity and the credibility of our district courts. And so I welcome this brief opportunity to explain why that is. I do have one area that I wanted to cover, though, because now that I've had even more time to go through this, I think some of the opinions, even that I cited, if not inconsistent, seem somewhat ambiguous in terms of the standard of review. In Trujillo-Castellon, which this court decided just in August, I'm sorry I don't have the F3 listing yet, there the analysis was plain error, deciding whether or not the remarks of this same judge seriously affected the fairness and integrity and the public reputation of judicial proceedings. But in Figueroa from 2010, same judge, there's no mention of plain error or lack of objections. There, I think the court was concerned directly with the promotion of the perception of a fair sentencing.
So let me, I don't want to make this too personal, but of all the arguments that Mr. Patrick might have been able to advance in his own behalf, in mitigation, the one that I wanted you to say a word or two about was his cooperation with the government, I guess both the federal and the state government. There was this letter, right, from Ms. Lewis in the state. And the judge doesn't say too much about that. All he says is, instead of doing life, I'm going to go down to 360 months, which is effectively anyway life. So tell me more about his cooperation.
I will. But there's one thing I think I want to add in terms of the dynamics of how that evolved in that proceeding, and that is, as you may remember, Mr. Wall made sort of kind of an oral
recommendation. Right, no, I remember all of that. And then he says, no, then just to clarify, he says this is a 5K, because the judge says that there's no 5K 1.1. And Mr. Wall pops up and says, yes, there is. And he says something strange, like, I'm going to grant it. But then he says, then he goes to the
60. I know, but that was part of the problem, Your Honor, because, I mean, when I was sitting there listening to this, I was contemplating whether or not I needed to say something, make a Santabello objection, so it wasn't set up well. Now, you want to know about the actual cooperation itself. Okay. I represented Mr. Patrick also in state court, in that homicide that you can read about in the briefs and in all the materials. On the very day that he pled, he sat down with agents of both state and federal and discussed, among many other things, aside from human trafficking. You're probably wondering about this kidnapping that we're referring to, but he discussed that as well. He had information that no one else had ever supplied. I'll just tell you what it is, because it's fascinating. The investigation of the disappearance of Alexis Patterson had always revolved around some guy in a van snatching her off the street. And Mr. Patrick told people, no, that's not what happened here, because he had been incarcerated with Booker Shipp, who was the man that Laurent Bourgeois had testified against, and Alexis Patterson was his stepdaughter. And Mr. Patrick told people, you're looking at this the wrong way. The reason that no one saw and no one heard anything is because she got into a van with friends of her mother's. And she got into a van with someone she knew. And that's where they're going with this right now. If that case is resolved, it'll be because of Mr. Patrick's, not just information, but also his insight into that. Does that, at least, I hope I answered that part of it.
So under the regime of the Booker case, a judge is permitted to have his own penological philosophy, as long as it's not, you know, totally unreasonable or bizarre. And although there are strange things in Judge Randa's protracted sentencing statement, what is it that we would say was, you know, unreasonable?
Strange things.
Strange comments, but he has a theory. You know, he says, for example, poverty causes crime causes poverty, poverty doesn't cause crime. Now, a lot of people would disagree with that, but there are a lot of people who believe that.
That wasn't the tenor of the comments, and I don't think that accurately reflects. You know, in the Smith case...
I don't understand you. I merely quoted something from his statement, and I asked you whether you thought that was unreasonable. And if not, is there something else in the statement that's unreasonable? I don't mean that strange thing about the couldn't satisfy his wife. I don't think we have to pay attention to that. But is there something, you know, concrete that you can say is just unreasonable and shows that this didn't properly, you know, reason to the sentence he gave?
The comments about crime causing poverty are appended to and are next to and part of Judge Randa's comments about how he can't go back to his own neighborhood, just like you said in the Smith case, he shouldn't say. And it really took on, and I'm the only one that was sitting there at the time, and I had to listen to this. It clearly was a you people argument. And if you read the entirety of the sentencing, and... You know, there's a reason why the newspaper reporter runs out and says, "Here we go again."
Well, wait a minute. I mean, you could make an argument, which is true in some of these earlier cases, that in fact the sentence was based on information outside the record. That's not supposed to happen. Judges can have a philosophy. They can think crime causes poverty or poverty causes crime or however they want to run that. But you're not supposed to sentence for reasons outside the record. You're not supposed to sentence because you think all people of a certain ethnic group are evil. You know, you're not there. There are various things that are outside the boundaries of the discretion. And so the way I've been looking at this transcript is I've been trying to ask myself, somehow, you know, when you take all of these things into account, these things that are so bizarre and off point that they don't even, I don't even know what they relate to, you know, is there enough there to justify the sentence? Mr. Patrick had a really bad record, and the judge does spend a fair amount of time talking about that as well.
His record was mostly, I represented him in that homicide. Having said that...
His crime does not trigger this concern that Judge Randa has expressed in previous cases, or at least one previous case, about his neighborhood being overrun by illegal immigrants, right?
No, it's just overrun by you people is what he meant in this case. And he pretty much says it, just like he did in the other cases. It's a recurring theme, apparently. So I guess I do view it differently. I view it the way the newspaper and the public view it. I'm not just an advocate. I'm a citizen as well. I'm just as concerned about the integrity and the credibility of the courts that I have to work in.
In response to Judge Wood, what's the worst thing he said in the transcript?
The worst thing.
In your view?
You got pissed off. That son of a bitch, Mason, is taking my girls.
Yeah, he's looking at this crime, the state crime, that relates to the federal crime, and he's interpreting how it happened.
But it was wrong. It wasn't even factually accurate. And then 12 kids by 10 different women. I mean, my God, how can you even satisfy 10 different women? I can't even satisfy my wife. If he would have said 12 kids by 10 different women, how can you take care of 12 kids? That would be a completely different comment. This is a personal attack. It's unwarranted. It's got nothing to do with the reason that we're there. How does it help us decide whether or not 3553 was adhered to or considered or even looked at? And, you know, here's the other thing. It's humiliating to have to sit there and listen to it. It really is, because I can't really say anything. I know in the Castillon case, you know, you reviewed for plain error because defense counsel didn't object. You know, when a judge is alternatively breathing fire and having steam coming out of his ears or even doing that at the same time, I'm not going to jump up and say, "I object." I mean, that just doesn't happen. It's humiliating to have to listen to it as a citizen, as a lawyer, and especially as an advocate. All I can say, the other thing is that Judge Randa many times said during the sentencing that he was talking about me, that I was being eloquent. That's when you know you're in trouble. So.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Wasserman. Mr. John Pietro?
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Gordon Giampietro, and I represent the United States in this case. As this Court knows, the standard of review here is whether this sentence imposed was substantively reasonable. And it's entitled to a presumption of reasonableness because it's obviously within the range. It's at the bottom of the range.
And there's a procedural element, too, and that's actually what concerned me. I'm not too worried about a lot of the things, but it seems to me that Mr. Patrick's most serious argument, and thus the argument that our law says the judge really needed to pay some attention to, was his cooperation. And it really takes the judge about a line or two. If you're reading the sentencing transcript, it couldn't have gone on for more than a minute. Obviously, I know it was one of your colleagues who was sitting there in the courtroom. And I feel that if one were to acknowledge the government's, the oral 5K1.1 motion, and think about the cooperation, something more than the offhand remark the judge gave was called for, especially since the judge does, in fact, choose a sentence that's the exact equivalent of the sentence that the judge says he wasn't going to choose. That is to say, life, you know.
Yeah.
And even with time off for good time or whatever, this guy's going to die in prison, and maybe should, you know. I mean, but we tell judges you have to give us some thought on the serious. Maybe there are two things, but in this case, it's cooperation.
Judge, I think the problem with that concern that you've expressed is that you have to look at the record in this case in terms of the 5K motion that was presented by the government by Assistant United States Attorney Joe Wall. It was limited to his cooperation in connection with the prosecution of another pimp in the state court case. This broader discussion about Mr. Patrick's potential value in the investigation of this kidnapping that Mr. Wasserman has discussed with you today, the difficulty, Judge, with that is it's simply not substantiated. It's simply not in the record. And so Mr. Wasserman has spent some time today giving you this flavor of how valuable Mr. Patrick's cooperation was.
Okay, you're a step beyond me, though, because what I'm looking for the page. What I'm saying is when there's this back and forth, when the judge first says, because of a misunderstanding perhaps, that there is no 5K motion, Mr. Wall, to his credit, pops up and says, no, I meant that to be there. And then the judge literally in a sentence.
Page 38 of this.
Yeah.
And Judge, I understand what your concern.
Yeah. He just says, well, then the court has to consider the 5K1 motion to determine. And he says a few things. Then he just says, the court finds there enough to grant. And then he just, boom, you know, there's nothing. He doesn't.
Right, Judge, here's my response.
You can tell us what he might have been thinking, but he doesn't tell us.
Well, but here's my response to that, Judge. I think that would be a concern in this case if the judge, as has happened in other cases, refused to grant the 5K motion.
No, it's also a concern when he doesn't explain. He says he grants it, but he doesn't grant it, really.
Well, Judge, he gave him a 60-month reduction in his sentence.
No. It was a life sentence, and he makes it 360. He's going to be 87 years old when he gets out of prison. Please.
No question, Judge, but we know, regardless, it is entitled to a presumption of reasonableness. And the difficulty here is,
but we need this procedural explanation. We have reversed sentences where there is no explanation of the serious point, whether it's a psychological disability point or whether it's something else. That's what I'm concerned
about. But, Judge, the reason I respectfully disagree is, again, in this context, the judge granted the government's motion, reduced the sentence by 60 months. To the extent that he didn't go further and give Mr. Patrick additional credit.
Why do you say he reduced it by 60 months anyway? He gives him a 360-month sentence instead of life. I mean, you could say he reduced it by 100 years. I mean, we don't know what life would have been. If he'd lived to 100, it was a big reduction. If he'd lived to something else, it was a smaller reduction. The government was arguing for a 300-month sentence. The judge goes 60 months higher than that.
Yes, I misspoke, Judge. You're right. He went from the guideline life sentence to 360. I understand that entirely. I guess what I'm getting at is
He never explains why he's doing it, especially given the fact that since it's a consecutive sentence, which it was certainly entitled to be, the sentence he chose was a life sentence.
Right, but the difficulty I'm having, Judge, with your concern is that that is a concern in other cases where the district judge does not give credit. And what this court is concerned with is...
No, I think the question is, what exactly does it mean to give a 5K reduction when you're reducing it from life? Because life isn't a number, right? So,
Judge, I think that's right. It's sort of an academic...
Are there other cases that deal with this? There are other life sentences?
Not that I'm aware of, Judge. I think
suppose he had said I'm reducing it to 480 months.
Right. Judge, I recognize it seems like a Pyrrhic victory for Mr. Patrick,
it's
of course.
It's not a victory at all.
That's what I say. It's Pyrrhic, Judge. That's
the problem is that the judge, all the judge had to have said would be that I would give you a life sentence, but I'm going to give you 360 months. Because of your cooperation. Now, maybe you think that's what he did say, but I don't know what more he could say if his intention was to give a life sentence were it not for the cooperation. Then he should explain how he got from life to 360 months, right?
Again, Judge, I think probably, sure, a couple extra sentences in the transcript would have satisfied the court's concerns, but I think if you look at the PSR in this case, the pre-sentence report.
If he's planning to make it consecutive, so you have you have 30 years on top of 20 years, given his age, that's what Judge Wood said, so it's going to be 87. That's probably not going to make it. But in any event, that would be a sort of good guess as to what a life sentence would be, right?
Agreed.
Now, maybe he's going to live to 90, three more years, all right. So then the judge could say, well, I was going to sentence you to life, and that would be the equivalent of a 396-year sentence. But instead, I'll give you 360. He could have said that, right?
Certainly,
doesn't
Judge.
He have to say something like that so you have some sense of how much of a break he's giving him? Maybe no break if his life expectancy is only 87. Probably isn't any higher than 87.
Judge,
how
I'm
old
actually,
is he? So he must be what, in his 30s?
He's 38 now.
Well, I don't think you have a 50-year life expectancy when you're 38.
The Center for Disease Control thinks that the average life expectancy for an African-American male like Mr. Patrick is about 70 years.
Well, is that from birth, though? Because of course you want life expectancy.
Nails born in 2007.
Judge,
he's born in 74.
I'm not entirely sure this procedural argument is preserved by Mr. Patrick on appeal. I understand the court's concern in that regard. I'm not sure that was an argument here that Judge Randa should have better articulated his reasoning with respect to the 5K motion. And I think that's probably because the judge, again, Pyrrhic or not, did say I'm granting the government's motion. Now, I won't go to, you know, the sort of particulars of Mr. Patrick's cooperation because it's outside the record. It would be inappropriate for me to sit here and tell you, as Mr.
Well, but we know that the judge thought that he should get the motion granted. But we don't know what that meant in the judge's mind.
I think it's a fair...
Given the fact, if it's true that his life expectancy is actually less than 50 years, then that doesn't mean this is actually a life sentence because the life expectancy is just an average. But
I guess the best way to look at
and that the judge misunderstood that really, given the person's age and life expectancy, the grant of the 5K motion did nothing.
I think, honestly, Judge, I think if you look at this record and you say, gee, we'd like the judge to explain a little bit better how he went from life to de facto life, that doesn't seem like much of a break.
He spends 45 pages explaining his sentence, and yet there's all these puzzles. Like this business about forget about satisfying his wife. But what exactly was he getting at when he talks about 10 children by 12 different women?
It's directly in response, Judge, to...
Does this relate to his How does it relate to the sentencing factors?
Here's exactly how it relates. This was a component of Mr. Patrick's argument that he cares for his family. He's a good guy, despite the PSR that shows a horrific criminal history, no work history, absolutely nothing pro-social in his life. The defense argument is, but he cares for those kids. This is the judge's response, and I think it's rightly invited, which is, who are you kidding? You're $146,000 in child support arrearages. You don't care for these kids. That's the response.
Yeah,
it's not.
He could have said that.
I think that's exactly what he gets
to
judge.
What does that have to do with the 12? With the number of women.
It's a response to the defense argument that he's caring for these 12 kids. He's a good guy, despite everything else.
You can't care for children from different partners.
I don't think that's the point at all, Judge.
He's a polygamist. Right?
I don't think that's at all what Judge Randa meant at all.
He's a polygamist.
I don't believe
He's a polygamist, right?
No, Judge.
I'm not saying this critically. I'm saying he is a polygamist, right?
He has 10 women. That normally would be polygamy.
The fact that he's polygamist doesn't seem to be relevant to his sentence. But maybe it could be made relevant. Now maybe you could say, well, that means really. I don't know exactly what it does mean. Well,
Judge, my time has expired.
He has a lot of children. He obviously is not in a position to support them when he's in prison. He may have supported them generously when he was the king of Milwaukee pimps.
The difficulty, Judge, is there's absolutely no evidence in this record that this defendant, as an indication of his pro-social behavior.
I'm curious about Judge Randa's thinking process.
I think his thinking process, as you indicated,
together with the other cases we've had, you wonder whether this is what a criminal defendant has a right to expect, some kind of thoughtful consideration of all the different factors. And when you're a sentencing person to 30 years on top of 20 years, you know, it.
Yeah,
well,
Judge, I just have to.
Business with the multiple.
I have to strenuously disagree. I think this notion in the reply brief that this is a recidivist judge is simply
what?
A recidivist judge based on
you
these prior
like
cases.
Wouldn't like to be sentenced by him. I'll tell you that.
Judge, maybe I shouldn't have been the one to argue this case because I clerked for Judge Rand and I know him personally, and I find these attacks on his character to be unfounded. And I would say that if you look at this record as you should. And you ask yourself, as Judge Wood said, what in this record
no
one's is troubling?
No one is attacking his character. It's the words on the page.
In this case,
we are
Judge,
focusing on in this case and in any other case that comes up.
And in this case, what are the words on the page that are so offensive that suggest that this judge is recidivist and cannot be trusted?
I think you made a big jump to recidivist judge. Judge Posner was just asking you, what's the relevance of this fact, no matter what judge was talking about it, no matter when? Forget that there was ever another case any time. And how many mothers is a different question than how many children.
It is, Judge, it is in the PSR. It is in response to Mr. Wasserman's argument that, yes, he's $146,000 in arrearage,
you know, because he doesn't want
but
to
he's
pay
a good
his
guy.
Child support to the state of Wisconsin. There's some indication in the record that he was paying under the table.
That's the argument of counsel, Judge. That's my point.
I'm going to say, though, that the law of Wisconsin is that child support is paid to a state agency, which then distributes it to the entitled party, whoever that is, the custodial individual. And I'll just say lightly, Mr. Patrick doesn't seem like the type who wanted to go through the state for these payments.
I don't disagree, Judge. I think the problem I'm having is you are being sucked into an argument where Mr. Patrick has nothing positive in his background at all to justify anything less than a life sentence. And the argument you're getting from the defense is,
but he had enough
this is a bad judge.
Office jumped up and said, wait a minute, Judge, wait a minute. We said a reduction and concurrent time in a 5K1 motion. He had that going for him.
And I believe, Judge, that was based on the value of his cooperation as to the pimp that was prosecuted in state court. I can't go into the particulars of the analysis in the office, but I can tell you outside the record, it had nothing to do with the Alexis Patterson kidnapping. So certainly our office viewed this as a reasonable sentence. The judge clearly disagreed and went significantly higher than our recommendation. But I think
okay,
it's a reasonable
thank
sentence.
You.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Mr. Wasserman. I think we've heard about the case. And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes.
Yes. Well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client.